Today we're speaking with legendary drummer Carmine Appice. And how are you doing today, Carmine?
I'm doing good.
And of course, the reason we're talking...
I'm in New York and it's cold.
Oh, okay. Having a white Christmas, I guess, huh? So, we're talking, of course, today because you recently launched your own record label. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we did it as a... the reason why we did it was basically my partner was a record guy. He worked a lot of in the labels. Mike Cusinelli is his name. And he came up with the idea. He said, you know, if you have any things laying around and you have some stuff that coming up with Cactus or any of your bands that you might want to release, you might want to think about starting your own label and releasing it on your own label instead of, you know, trying to give it away to anybody else that, you know, will probably rip everybody off anyway. I said, yeah, maybe you're right. So... I did have some projects, you know, and basically I said, you know, why don't we release this, this, and this, and this? So, you know, Mike agreed. He ended up getting us a deal. He does the business, and I do the creative stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike ended up doing a deal with us for the label with E1, which used to be Koch. And then, you know, I knew who they were, and I thought they were fairly a good size distributor. So they became our distributor, and they gave us some seed money to start the label. And we hired publicists and engineers and stuff to put all the products together and the artwork, and, you know, all that stuff costs a little money to get it going. So they supplied the seed money, and the first four product we wanted released digitally. Just to get the label going, because really when you print up CDs, unless the bands are on tour all the time, you know, it's hard to place the CDs physically now, because there's only a few mom and pop stores around, you know?
Yeah.
And all the stores that used to supply, you know, labels like this with places to put the product, like Tower Records and, you know, just all those kind of Tower Record stores are all gone.
Yeah.
Now, so the only place you get it now is Best Buy's, and Best Buy seems to only take things that are, you know, fairly big, you know, like AC/DC or Whitesnake or Ozzy and Black Sabbath, you know.
Yeah.
They wouldn't really take on Cactus or Over the Peace and Friends because it's, you know, that's just the way they work, you know. Whereas the other record stores that used to be record stores, you know, they used to take on a lot of product, and that's where these indie labels actually made it or break it at these other levels, you know. So we decided to go with the first four just digital worldwide releases, and I'm finding too when all my other labels on my bands and Ella Fudge and Jeff Beck and all that, I mean, most of the sales are in the digital versus the hard copies, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people like that because, you know, they can get it right then and now. So these first four releases, how they've been selling since you launched the label?
Yeah. So that basically makes it easy for everybody. The only problem with, you know, I used to enjoy going to a record shop and looking through the CDs of new bands, obscure bands, new bands, you know. You can't do that no more.
Yeah,
you know, why there's no new icons out there. You know what I'm saying? There are no new drum icons, guitar icons, bass icons. There might be some singer idols.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not icons. You know, they're not like, you know, Robert Plant. They're not like Steven Tyler. There's no Paul Rogers. You know what I mean? These pop guys.
I miss those days of going to a record store like you're saying, Carmine, and, you know, going to local Tower Records and checking out all the new releases and trying to save my money up to, you know, get everything. And, you know.
Yeah, and you walk in and you got, you know, videos playing of the new band. You might be listening to stuff on the speakers throughout the thing, and then they'll show you who they're playing. You got displays up in the record companies are able to put up displays to get the attention of a certain band. So you walk in there and you go, oh, wow, who's that? Who's that? Look at the CD, and you can open the CD up and see who's playing on it and what it's about. Now it's just a quick, you know, the name of the song, and you play a little bit and you download it.
And so,
you know, you get an album cover, and that's it.
Yeah. How's the what's the name of the label? Hello?
Megan?
What's the name of your label?
My label is called Rocker. Rocker Records.
Oh, and it must be having a one-stop shop for all Carmine Appice music. That must be great for your fans. How have these initial releases been selling?
Well, I don't really know, because I don't do that part of it.
Okay.
My partner does. And, you know, we are just starting to do these interviews that I'm doing now to get the word out that we have these releases out there. Because, you know, we did some banner stuff on iTunes and all that, but, you know, that's the other thing with the digital. It's not a thing unless you're a huge artist again.
Yeah.
You know, where you're going to get 100,000 downloads in a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a slow process, you know. It's a building process. And because you're on digital, you don't have to, like in the old days, you'd have to put 5 CDs in the store. If they sell out, then they reorder.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't sell out. They don't reorder. Yeah, you're just sitting on a digital thing, so it may take 6 months or something. Sometimes something happens 6 months later, you know, for some whatever reason.
So this,
you know, but the fact of the matter is, we're out there. We started the label. It's out there. We're working it, and we'll see where it goes. You know, I don't expect to be selling any million sellers anytime soon.
Yeah. So, this label, Carmine, in the future, will it be, solely for anything that you're involved with? Will you be like King Cobra and
anything? No, it's other things. It's gonna be whatever I have. Like right now, I'm pretty much out of all my products. I've done 13 albums with this company called Fuel, which I've pretty much done. And these 4 things I just released really isn't, that's the end of what I have.
Uh-huh.
We have a new Cactus album coming out, it's a new one on my label. We have a new Cactus DVD. We have a group called The Lizards coming out with a record, and then we have the Melophiles Live in New York City at BB King's tonight. Coming out in the first quarter. After that, we're looking at other groups. We have a guitar player that's going on tour with Shinker.
Okay.
And J.Q. Lee. He'd be a new product, a new artist. You know, we're looking at that also. So, you know, we're just looking at releasing other artists as well. You know, Lawrence, they have to be like on some sort of tour. In order to make it work to release physical product,
yeah,
they have to be on some sort of tour.
Okay.
Okay, that way, whatever city, you could almost follow around. If there are mom and pop stores in those cities, you can do some in stores.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a, even whatever, if there's Barnes & Noble that still sells some CDs, and they agree to put CDs in there and do an in store, we can do that.
Wow, that's.
But you got to be on tour doing that kind of stuff. Otherwise, you know, like I said, selling hard copies is really difficult these days, you know?
And that's a great thing. And now you were talking about there's not many iconic musicians, these days, which is the sad truth. But you're a guy I've always admired, Carmine, not just for your powerhouse drumming, but you've been involved in various different styles of bands, from everything from Vanilla Fudge to Rod Stewart. Is that something you set out to do when you first started playing music?
Yeah, because I love to play.
Yeah.
To me, when I grew up, I played all kinds of music. I played jazz, I played rock, I played what we call society music, which is like the stuff Rod Stewart sings, that Frank Sinatra stuff. You know, I played Latin in those gigs, I played weddings, bar mitzvahs, all that stuff. You know, so, you know, just me playing with Vanilla Fudge and playing with Rod Stewart and playing with Ozzy, you know, it's 3 different genres of music almost, even though it comes under, the rock label, Now it's all labeled different. You know, Vanilla Fudge was like progressive rock. Rod Stewart was pop rock. Ozzy was metal. You know what I mean? But it's still all rock. And for me, the styles are very similar to playing. The way I played, I never really had to adjust my playing to the bands I played with. You know, it just happened to work. You know, and I just love playing. I'm doing a show now called The Rod Experience, which is basic historical tribute to Rod and the band from 76 to 82 in the Rod Stewart group that I played in, and all the big songs we had with Rod and how the songs came about, and it's going to be sort of like a historical concert, you know?
And are you taking that all over?
I got a guy playing Rod.
Wow.
So that'll be we already have our first gig in May, which will be the very first gigs we're doing. We have 5 shows in one venue, and that's what I want. I want to do like multiple shows in one venue, so it's like a residency, semi residency, you know.
Well, that's cool.
I want to have video behind it. Wow. I want to have, video stuff from the past coming up behind us when we're playing. We're playing Hot Legs. I want to have the year to come up. I want to have the album cover come up. Maybe some headlines, some pictures of the band that played it back then. That kind of stuff. So people get the whole environment, That's just guys trying to play Rod Stewart show. And then the guys that are in the band are the guys that were in Rod's band that made the hits.
Oh, you like Jimmy Crespo and some guys like that?
Yeah, Jimmy Crespo is in it. Danny Johnson, Phil Chen.
Wow.
Myself, and this guy Alan St. John that played with keyboard with Billy Squire and all that. Because the two keyboard players we have with Rod, they're busy doing songwriting, producing, everything. They don't want to go on the road anymore.
Yeah, and so this Rod Stewart show. Are you going to be taking all across the U.S. or just in small cities to start with?
Well, we're starting in Dallas, so there's going to be a country mostly start in the U.S. unless somebody comes up with some gigs somewhere else.
Yeah.
If they come up, like Jimmy Crespo's wife works for the Venetian family, and she said they have properties in Malaysia and Singapore that want for the show in there. So we would definitely go do that. It's interesting. If you want to see more information about it, go to rodexperience.com.
Oh, that's cool. That's definitely something I'd like to check out. Do you think you might shoot a DVD of something like that, or?
Well, I don't know right now about a DVD. Right now we're more interested in setting the show.
Yeah, yeah.
We did record 4 songs already.
Oh, that's
on the video, and we mixed them. They sound really something good. As you'll see, if you go onto that site, we'll hear the songs that go with the video. They sound very much like the records.
Yeah, well,
and that's what I'm trying to do, is recreate the whole thing.
Oh, that's cool. And I want to ask you, Carmine, because I've seen you on That Metal Show and a couple other places where you just like twirl your sticks and you don't even need a drum kit necessarily to, keep a beat. Where did you learn to do stuff like that? Because you're just a phenomenal player, I think.
What is that, the twirling?
Yeah, I've seen you, like, just...
Oh, click the sticks together?
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned that from, in the early 80s, I learned that, actually. Actually, it was earlier than that. It was probably in the 70s. I saw Buddy Rich doing something like that. And then a friend of mine that I had actually given lessons to, was a student of mine, and then became a friend. He knew how to do it. It's something he learned in marching band, and he showed me how to do it. I've been doing it ever since the early 80s, the late 70s, because I was with Rod Stewart when I started learning it.
Yeah.
And I still went around the studio practicing. It was doing some crazy.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, talking about your... being such a powerhouse drummer, I've heard you in other interviews, you talk a little bit about, your concept is to bring, the drums to the front of the stage, because most drummers like to tend to sit in the back and kind of just hide, but you're one of these guys that, you're the main attraction, if you know what I mean, and you're the one everybody's watching.
Well, that was my dream, was to be the Gene Cooper of rock and bring the drums out front. That's why, they have the Guitar Center drum off. I started that.
Yeah.
As a drum promotion. I did it for 5 years, and then they stole it from me.
Wow.
And it used to be called the Carmine Peace Drum Off. And we did the first one at Tower Records in L.A., in Hollywood, on Sunset Boulevard. It was so successful. There were thousands of people there. They all overflowed into Sunset Boulevard and created traffic jams.
Wow.
Ended up being on all the news, and I did it to promote 2 nights. I was playing at the Whiskey Delta, which actually sold out.
Wow.
And then the next one we did a year later at Griffin Park, we had 10,000 people there. And Buddy Rich was a judge, which was unbelievable. So I had done a lot of big promotions, took it around the country, showed Guitar Center how to do it. And then next thing I know, they ripped me off, and I took a year off that I never made any money on.
Oh.
I always did it for the promotion of drumming, you know?
Yeah.
And then next thing I know, they're calling me up, asking me to be a judge in the guitar center drum off. I said, what are you kidding me? That's my cup. That's my thing.
Wow.
No, we thought you stopped doing it. I said, no, we didn't. I didn't stop doing it. I took a break. And I did it for 5 years, you know, bust my ass on it for 5 years for no money, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I continued and did the drum clinics and, you know, and always kept the press going, tried to keep the drummer out there, you know?
Yeah, and, I wanted to ask you, I know you and your brother Vinny were doing what similar type of thing called Drum Wars. Are you guys still doing that?
Yeah, we're still doing that. We just did one a few weeks ago, and we're working on some more now. End of January to February, we did 20 shows in Europe. Last year we did I don't know, 10 shows in Canada, another maybe 10 shows in America. So we've got a total of probably 50, 60. More shows together. It's a lot of fun.
And what's that like?
I enjoy it.
What's that like getting up there on stage with your brother and, you know, you guys, I mean, brothers are always competing and stuff. That must, you know, be kind of a thrill to be up there and trying to...
Yeah. Well, we drive each other to the limits, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because we both, you know, we're both capable of playing very similar to each other, and then, you know, Penny's drum style is a little different than mine because he's a single bass. And, you know, he does certain things that push me, and I do certain things that push him to the limits, you know. So it's always a good show when we get together. And then we goof off, we have some funny things, and we, you know, we have a little bit of humor in the show, you know.
And do you think you guys, you know, are the same type of drummers? I mean, obviously, you being the older one, I'd imagine you kind of influenced him to pick up the sticks.
It was because of me that Billy started playing drums,
uh-huh.
You know, because he was watching me on television. He was watching me, looking at me in a magazine and hearing me on the radio when he was growing up. So my mother took him to my shows, you know. So he was very inspired by drums. I left the drums at home and he started playing them. So when he was about 8 or 9 years old, when I went back to visit my parents,
uh-huh.
You know, I had been on the road all over the place and I'd show up in Brooklyn all decked out for stage, but during the day, you know.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do then. My red velvet jacket and flowered shirts and scarves and velvet pants, and I'd walk into my house, you know, and I'd pull up in a Jaguar or a Pantera, and the whole neighborhood would go crazy, you know.
And I know,
And Vinny would, you know, be inspired by all that. So he had talent, and we sent him for lessons. He had the passion to do it. By the time he was 12, he was a great drummer.
Wow.
When Rick Derringer called my mother to get Vinny to play with him, he called and my mother kept saying, no, you don't want to talk to Vinny, you want to talk to Carmine. She said, no, I want to talk to Vinny.
Wow.
And she couldn't believe that, okay, here goes to the other son now. He was only 17 years old then.
Wow.
So because of me, he got playing and, you know, I sent him to the lessons and he had the talent, and then he got the breaks, and he, you know, just worked until he made it, you know. He's pretty rare.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Now, I know you recently, a couple of years ago, revamped King Cobra with Paul Shortino, and you guys put out a new album this last year. You guys still got any plans to tour behind that, or...?
Well, that band just seems to be, for now, it's just an album band.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, back in the day, the band wasn't that big, even though we got a lot of press and it looked like we were big. But really, in essence of the record sales, we didn't sell a lot of records. So, you know, when it came time after that first record came out 2 years ago to try and book gigs, the gigs that were being booked financially were impossible to do without having, like, a record company to do tour support and all that, like they did in the old days. Yeah, but nobody does that anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So there was no way we could actually get out there and make a positive, even a little bit of positive money. It was all negative. Now, I wasn't prepared to lose money. I lost money in the 80s on the band. You know? I didn't want to lose more money on it, just for the heck of it, you know? So there was no reason to go out and play, you know, because there was no positive money being generated for it.
Yeah, and
so we never did. Then we did the second album, and sort of the same thing happened, So we said, well, maybe we'll just end up being one of these bands that can keep doing albums. We'll sell enough to keep doing albums.
Yeah.
And keep giving the fans music, and then, you know, eventually maybe we can do a couple of festivals here and there. They pay enough money to make it worthwhile, you know?
And do you think that's
a great record? Both records are great records.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think part of the reason you've been able to remain a successful musician is because, you know, you're not just in one band, you're doing a little bit of, you got more than one thing going on at a time?
Well, in the old days I was in one band.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm still getting royalties from those old days.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm still getting royalties from my songwriting with Rod, which was Deke. You know, I still get my drum book royalties. I always had more than one thing going on, you know?
That's great.
There was always one band that I did sessions, you know, when I was at Rod, I did sessions to other big people. You know, I did sessions for Paul Stanley, I did sessions with Eric Carmen, I did sessions with Stanley Clark and Eddie Money, you know.
Yeah.
And I did clinics. The clinic thing was a whole other thing. My education side of my career was a whole other side of it that made money.
Wow.
When I went on the road with some bands, with Ozzy and Ted Nugent and Lou Murder and stuff, I would do master classes in these markets and teach and make extra cash. And so for me, doing multiple projects at once is a no-brainer, you know?
Yeah.
The hard part comes when you're trying to, like, you know, I got a few things going for next year that I have to, you know, juggle around, you know?
Yeah.
To make sure that one doesn't get in the way of the other, you know?
Yeah, and
I want to really launch this Rod show.
Yeah.
We've got a Vanilla Fudge European tour in March.
Wow.
Now, I wanted to do April and May launching the Rod show. Then June and July doing some of these shows with this new band I have with Joel and Turner and Tommy Franklin.
Wow, okay.
You know, during European festivals. And then there was a tour that Vanilla Fudge might do for 3 weeks in the summer, you know, and then. You know, maybe the Rock thing again in the fall, you know. But I don't know, you know, right now, because we got agents out there pitching it and putting it together. You know, the one with Joel and Turner, the album's not even done yet.
Wow, okay.
So, we're doing it now. We're hoping to have it out by May 20th. Usually, you know, when you get an album out May 20th, I mean, you want to be in the road maybe a month later.
Yeah.
You know? The album circulated a little bit, even over here, you know. So we're right in the middle of all this things. But I've always been one to juggle things around and do clinics and, you know, play on this one, you know. All my albums I played on were all career albums.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I played a Pink Floyd album, you know. Like, I don't just do Joe Schmo's album, you know. Joe Schmo calls and look, I'll give you $1,000 to play on my song. I usually don't do it.
Simple fact that you would have a bigger name than Joe Schmo, you know.
Exactly. That's why every once in a while, if there's a friend of mine, I know somebody and they're doing an album, you know, and I really like to play, and, you know, I like their song, I might play a track or two for less money, just for fun, because I like it, you know. But mostly, if you look at my discography, on my website, it's all with pretty big names, you know. Yeah. From Vanilla Fudge to Cactus to BBA to Rod Stewart to Ozzy to Ted Nugent, you know, and Rick Derringer and Blue Murder.
List goes on and on, yeah.
It's either names or my band.
Yeah.
You know, my project.
Yeah, that's cool. And last thing I want to ask you before I let you go is, getting back to your label, for the other artists that are going to be on the label, can they send you stuff, or is this about you approaching?
No, there's going to be some other artists. We have this group called the Lizards, which is the harmonica player from Cactus.
Wow.
He, uh, he had this group called The Lizards. He plays bass in that band.
Yeah.
And you got Bobby Rondinelli, who was in Rainbow, and he was in Black Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult for a long time.
Okay.
And you got Frankie Marino playing on that. You have Glenn Hughes singing some tracks on that. So that's like a little bit of an all-star lineup on that record. Then we're going to have, my brother had a band called Three-Legged Dog. We're looking at releasing. He had Vinny and Jimmy Bain from Dio.
Okay.
He had Carlos Cavazo from Quiet Riot.
Wow, I remember, yeah.
Jazz West played with Bonham and UFO and a couple of the bands.
Wow, okay.
And so we'll release that with them. And then we have this guitar player that's going on tour with Michael Schenker and Jakey Lee's band. He's coming out, and we're negotiating with him right now. And to get him out there, too. So,
well,
and there's a couple other projects that we're looking at.
Well, Carmine, I'd like to thank you for taking time to do this. It's really been fun talking to you. And let me just say this interview is going to go up probably in early January. I'll let Chip know once it's up.
Okay.
And,
cool. All right. Sounds good, man.
And let me just say, before I let you go, I'd like to interview you about your Rod project when you get that going, too.
Okay.
Okay.